It's getting hard to find
good, clean,
good,
fun.
Clean fun, AD. Who wants that? Who wants good, clean fun? Well, you can find it.
Who's looking for that?
Down at the roller rink.
Oh, we got Trooper. No.
This is Trooper. Yes.
What record is this?
Oh, this is way too far in the catalog for anyone's sanity or good taste. This is Flying Colors from 1979.
Oh, they were way
this
gone.
This is where
then,
I realized I went too far.
But they had found the 80s, apparently.
Yes, they did.
Or at least their producer and their record label told them they had better find the 80s.
Ugh. So I think you're good with the first three Trooper records.
Yeah, I'd say that's safe.
They really like their good, clean fun. There's something so not rock and roll about this.
No, this is like, it might as well be a Jefferson Starship song.
Ooh.
During their like lame period, or Billy Squire once he went totally full gay.
So if Canadian Jefferson Starship is your thing, then check out Flying
check
Colors
out,
by Trooper from 1979.
Yes, I will not immediately.
It's so close to being a good Nick Gilder song, but I kind of like the hook. Getting hard to find. I like that part. And then he goes, good, clean, fun. I'm like, no. So again, we need to fix their lyrics like Roller Rink. You're trying to get into it.
I mean, Nick Gilder knew he was pop. These guys still believe they're rock, and that's, I think, the difference.
Yeah, there is a disconnect.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. All right, well, let's get cracking here.
Let's crack. Crack is fantastic, especially this time of year.
Release the Kraken!
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Labba!
Hey, Labba!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, the nine-toe having his bitch in Harlem, A.D. Adams!
That's right, sugar britches. We are back! It's a brand new year, and me, oh my, oh, here we are once again back at old Shabby Road Studio after our much-needed time away from this during the holidays. And with the dawning of this new year, expectations are high, spirits are bright, hope is refreshed and renewed. Well, that is until I had sloshed once again through the bum, piss, and hurl in this parking lot to get to the front door of this shithole this evening. But hey, who cares? It's officially 2019. The gang's all here, and we got records. Let's say we spin them some bitches.
Let's do that. Woo. Let's do that. Hey, everybody. It's season six of the Shabby Road Record Show. This is launching our sixth season of this madness.
This.
How exciting.
This.
This thing.
Oh, we have a box of goodies over there, by the way. That red tin, Christmas tin.
Wow. Left over?
Mike Traficano and Missin sent us some goodies. So I saved them for us, and they're good now. They're better now than they were.
Is it, what's in there? Pot brownies or something?
No, some sort of dairy product. I'm sure it's really rancid by now. No, I made that up. No, it's baked goods and peanut brittle.
Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Rum balls. Bourbon balls.
Bourbon balls?
Thank you for that. Ooh, hey, don't you call me bourbon balls, honey.
That one dishing out the bourbon balls.
Tequila tits.
Is old tequila tits herself. That is Liz Damian Brooks. How was your holidays, Liz Damian Brooks? We're
busy,
back here.
Busy.
Yeah, me too. We were just all over the place with the Christmas, the Crimbles, and then we were out of town for a whole week with Louis Prima around New Year's, which was a party.
I've been riding in limos and hanging out with rock stars.
Yeah, you've been first class in it, right?
She's working at this big rock club in the valley here. We're in Arizona, and she is like risen through the ranks.
Rose
through the ranks, and she's now riding in limos and traveling with the rock stars.
Yeah.
Which is a fitting place for Liz. She's perfect for that.
She's a freaking rock star, if you ask me. Always has been.
Absolutely, she is. You know who's not a rock star, AD?
No, who's that?
Her computer sidekick, that Sal 5000.
Electronic skank. Yeah,
there she
is.
That's
the one we're talking about.
Still pissed off. She had 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, and she's still mad at the world.
I heard she stayed awake the entire time.
I bet she did.
I like things that are bad for me.
Oh. I know you do. I know you do.
Good clean fund.
Good clean fund is not under the heading of Sal 5000.
No.
So let's give a shout out to our dear, dear friends who are also sponsoring us this season, season six. That is, of course, our friends over at nameonanything.com.
Oh, nameonanything.com. You know, Ryan, we've been talking about those great folks over at nameonanything.com on this lovely...
I hear a motorcycle.
Oh, a motorcycle. Okay. You
know,
Ryan.
Angels. We don't need to get
burping.
An update.
No. We've been talking about those great folks on nameonanything.com on this lovey howl of a show for quite some time now, and it seems like they never run out of stuff to put your name on, because at nameonanything.com, you can customize and personalize pretty much anything you can think of, from caps and clothing to cups and canisters, from boots, umbrellas, and rain gear to whips and ball gags and pain gear, from custom band photos to guitar picks. They got cash boxes, stash boxes, and so much more, all with your name, your company, or your band logo, or your favorite photo on it. Pretty cool, huh? Fucking A right, that's pretty cool. And if you can think of it, they can get it done for you. Nameonanything.com, that's nameonanything.com.
You know what I'll do is I'll knock 10% off your order. That's how confident I am in our audience. I am so in love with the people in the Shabby Academy. 10% goes right off the top of the bill thanks to me.
Wow, Ryan.
Over at nameonanything.com.
Look at you.
If you just mention us. No, mention me.
Just Ryan.
Mention
Ryan
me.
Says.
Mention Ryan and you'll get zero.
Yeah, they'll go, fuck off, go somewhere else.
Yeah. We don't have that. We don't make those anymore.
All right, well, we got a couple records each here to dole out for you fine people tonight. We're very excited to be back here in Shabby. This is, it's been too long, actually.
It's
I do miss it. I do
we're
miss
approaching,
it.
Approaching number 200, aren't we?
We are getting very close. We encourage our audience to start writing in song requests for our 200th episode.
Yes.
This is 198.
So two more, a couple
so,
more weeks.
So let us know via our various social media outlets. That would be the Book Faces, the Instagrams, and the one with the bird. At Shabby Podcast, just let us know what you want to hear, and we'll put a post out. But
you'll
see
have
it.
A specific version too, not just band. Like maybe there's a live version of a song that you particularly like.
Yeah.
More than so, you know.
Or say like more toe fat. AD.
Right. I've been looking for that toe fat, the first one. I got toe fat, too. I need that first one. I'll find it.
Yeah, we'd be happy to go shopping, too, to make sure that it gets played for the show. So, very exciting news. 200 episodes. Holy crap.
Yeah, look at that.
What's going on in that mystery box of yours tonight?
Dude, mine is awesome. You know, it's a great first box of the year, if I do say so myself, yes. Which I can't, actually.
Well, it's been a few weeks since you've podcasted.
English, do you speak it?
No, I do not. But I have a track from a band who suffers from either golden earring syndrome, or you could just consider them a one-hit wonder, or both, or neither, whatever. You guys be the judge.
Okay.
From 1974, a band that was the perfect blend of...
There it is.
Yeah. Perfect blend of prog, hard rock, and straight up rock and roll. I've really become a fan of this band as of late, and I'll be completing my collection of their releases as soon as possible. I've also brought a record that is, well, it's the mystery box, and this was a mystery. The song was a mystery. It was an elusive little song, but my mystery box is giggling now because I tracked it down from 1980. It's one of those songs that was in and out of my life for the entire decade of the 80s. I didn't know who it was, didn't know anything about it, but there it was, and it was constantly ringing in my head. I was looking for it. I never found it, and then I found it in weird ways, and then it escaped me again, and 10 years later came back, and I found that record a couple of weeks ago, and now I own the song Story's Over. It's just a weird little story about how music can get into our brain.
Clearly, it's Make It Big by Wham.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Yes, that's a good guess. No, 1980 from Louisville, Kentucky via Boston, Massachusetts. It's an amazing story. Just a weird story. You ever have a song that you hear like years ago and it sticks in your head so hard and you don't know who did it, you don't know anything about it, And that song won't go away. You only remember little bits of it, but it's so hooky and it's driving you bonkers. And a decade later, you go, holy fuck.
There's that
holy
song.
Holy shit. Yeah, so it's that. And this one also comes with a
this
time.
This is a very important record to you.
It is. It's a really kind of a cool thing. I was really happy to find it. It was okay. One of those celebratory moments. And I'm not that celibate.
You are now.
This one. Not when I'm alone. But boom. This one, yeah, in public. But this one comes with a time signature challenge as well.
Wow. So. Is this your first record or your second record that you're playing tonight?
It's probably I'll probably make my second one.
Okay, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I love
so what
the time.
You got? Yeah, what you-
I've got a soundtrack album from 1978.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, it can't be good.
Don't be scared. It's not.
St. Elmo's Fire.
It's nothing. But that's from the 80s.
Whatever.
It's not Grease or Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So you be. It's safe. It's safe. Everyone's going to like it. Right. Second album is one that I've done a complete 180 on. You know, like where you kind of either love it or hate it, and then at some point you kind of just change your mind about the record and it just spins in the other direction.
So do you like it now or do you hate it now?
I don't like it. I do not like
and
it now.
You brought it and you foist that upon us.
I will explain.
Okay.
I will explain. My mystery box does have a theme, and it's basically, I'm not going to give too much away. I'm just going to say this phrase. Who do you think you are?
Okay.
To do that.
All right.
That's the miss. That's the thing. So let's
I'm
get
so confused.
Let's get these things open.
Yes,
Liz has the two playing cards.
Yes, I do.
As she searches for those, let's give a Laurel and Hardy handshake to our pal Dan McBride, who bought some beer for
Dan.
Us tonight. Way back in late November, yeah. I think it was.
Laurel.
Laurel. That is so May 2018. Laurel. We're in season six.
Laurel.
Dan McBride, we saw him in Pennsylvania,
yes.
Him and his wife, yep. At a Louis Prima show.
Yes,
we were playing
nice
at.
Very nice to hang out. And it
yeah.
Was fun. It was big fun.
He went by the website shabbyroadrecordshow.com and got us an 18-pack of Miller High Life, Sadie, by using the PayPal link and that big old frosty mug of beer. You guys know the drill by now if you've been listening to the show, and if you're just jumping in here on season six, welcome and go buy some beer.
Yes.
No, just kidding.
Liz wants a beer.
Okay, I'll take one too. So, all right. Well, Liz has the two playing cards. AD is doling out beer. I guess that leaves me to choose left or right hand for the first one of season six. I am going to break from tradition, Liz. I usually pick left, Sinister, but
no,
I'm going to go.
I don't want no Coors.
Where's that Miller High Life? What is that?
It's not cold yet.
Okay, I'll take
a
course.
I'll wait till it gets cold.
I'll take a course. You know me. I'm going to go right hand. Right hand, Liz, please.
And it's
still
you.
Me. I am.
You are.
Well, you're not kidding. This is Coors, the banquet of beers.
Yes.
This is not what Dan brought us.
No. There was some in there from before.
Okay.
And I put the other ones in. I didn't get ice, so I had to actually throw them in the freezer, so it's going to take a while.
Damn it. All right. So
what have you been doing all week?
Got nothing better to do all day.
Oh, you have no idea. You don't want to know.
I have a soundtrack album, as I mentioned, from 78.
Okay. I get to guess.
So, Stig, Nasty, Dirk, and Barry created music that will last a lunchtime. Their first album was recorded in 20 minutes. The second album took even longer. Who have I got, Liz?
I know, yeah.
I don't know.
It's a gift that you got me for Christmas. AD.
Is
it's
it?
It's the Ruddles.
It's the Ruddles.
Yes.
Oh,
as soon as you said
yay.
Stig and Nasty, I'm like, ah. Because Stig, I thought you were talking about Stigwood originally, and then Nasty, and then Dirk. I'm like, okay.
A 78 soundtrack
right.
With Robert Stigwood involved would have led us down a dark
path.
Thinking,
that,
that's what
yeah,
I'm,
I was thinking Stigwood.
I was fearing the worst.
So this, of course, is The Ruddles, as the AD said. This is an album you see in every record bin from coast to coast.
Have you seen the movie?
Watched it today on YouTube.
It's fantastic.
It is available, so click over now if you don't know what this is. Well, not now, but after we're done talking about this album, you can go watch it on YouTube. It's an hour-long mockumentary akin to Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap-ish.
A Beatles parody film, and this is the soundtrack to that thing. It's chronicling the history of a fictitious band called The Ruddles, which matches the Beatles' lifespan, basically note for note. Yeah. Just about note for note and sound for sound. Instead of help, it's ouch. Yeah. So this is all the brainchild of Monty Python alum Eric Idle and a musician called Neil Innes from the Bonzo Dog Band. Now I'm inclined, after listening to this record, which is just poppy and just really good, you know, I'm a Beatles fan anyway, so I don't mind the sort of aping all the Beatles stuff or the pastiche of it all.
And it's well done.
It is well done. And it's funny.
It is.
That hour-long mockumentary is hilarious.
It's a great, great little film. Oh, it is. It's so worth it. Yeah.
So Eric and Neil, they play McCartney and Lennon, the McCartney and Lennon characters, respectively, or Dirk McQuickley and Ron Nasty. So this whole project began in 1975, actually, as a sketch on Idle's BBC TV comedy called Rutland Weekend Television. So if any of our listeners and you guys here in this room, do you remember SCTV?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is Second City.
Second City TV.
Out of Chicago, but Canada's like Canada. Toronto and stuff,
yeah.
Right? It's basically like a fake TV station. And so the sketch comedy is based around like coming up this show and this show. And that's where this Ruddles documentary sort of begins to take shape. The city Rutland, or the county Rutland, is a legitimate county in the UK. It's the second smallest county in the East Midlands of England.
Okay.
So it's actually a real place. It says, I wonder if there's a listener in Rutland. If there is, please let us know.
Yes. And what do you do there?
Yeah, it's the population's
we
like
do, farm. We do things. We do things.
We have sheep.
We do things.
I think that the population's like 34,000 in the county. Okay.
We don't do many things.
So this sketch that they did was well received and found its way across the pond to Lorne Michaels, who has a new television show on NBC called Saturday Night Live. And in 1976, they run parts of the sketch, and they put things together, separate, you know, and add to it. So it became kind of a cool thing that Lorne Michaels stumbled upon and like, oh, we got to air this. This would be perfect for the show, Saturday Night Live. And eventually this thing takes off. It's kind of funny. It's, you know, obviously a Monty Python sort of take on the Beatles. And eventually a full 1 hour feature was filmed, and it's called All You Need Is Cash,
yes.
Which you can watch right now on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and just All You Need Is Cash, just type that in. It comes up. It's 1 hour and 6 minutes, and it's hilarious. I really enjoyed it. I watched it this morning.
Did you?
I was like, oh, man, this is Monty Python, basically. So let me talk about some of the other people in the Ruddles here. We talked about those two. Ricky Fattar was the drummer for the Beach Boys during a run of those early 70s records that I dig. I brought them both here. Holland, Surf's Up.
Yeah.
Remember those cool Beatles records from the early 70s? So he's George Harrison's analog, Stig O'Hara.
Wow, who knew that?
Yeah, he's from South Africa, and he met up with the other dude that was Chaplin, was it? I forget the guy's name. The other dude that was in the Beach Boys at the time. Because those string of cool Beach Boys records from like 70 to 73, Holland, Surf's Up, something about Carl Wilson's thing, and then there's a double live album. I talked about it a few episodes. Yeah.
Carl Wilson's dorsal fin.
So, and then Joe Halsey plays the Ringo character, and Barry Womble, shortened to Wom.
Womble.
Because Ringo's real name was shortened to Star.
Oh, right. Okay.
Starkey. The only thing I read about him,
you know, the Wombles, it's like the banana splits of England.
He was also like a session drummer. I should mention, going back to Ricky for a minute, for the Beach Boys guy, he played drums, but on this record he plays bass, guitar, and sings. You know, so for real. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And I think the guy John Halsey, the drummer for the Ruddles, is actually the drummer on the record.
Oh wow.
And I guess he says that he spent, after this Ruddles phenomenon was over, he spent much of the 1980s selling fish from the back of a van after a near fatal accident in Chichester, in 83, and that since then he has been in the pub trade.
On which end of it?
I don't know. Yeah. Which end of the bar is he
I've been in the pub trade. I've been in the drug trade. I've been in the prostitution trade.
Well, now he's
just been the guy that pays the money.
He's now the landlord of the Castle Inn public house in Castle Street, Cambridge.
Ah. Well, if you're in the area, stop by.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Go say hi to John. In this documentary, there's so many celebrities in this documentary that you'll see on YouTube.
Definitely a who's who.
Mick Jagger is interviewed, totally deadpan, totally straight, like the Ruddles are real and this happened.
And it's the same questions he was asked when the Beatles were around, really.
Yeah. And he's great in it.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he's really funny in it. George Harrison plays an interviewer, so even a real bona fide Beatle is in there, and it's a pretty funny scene when they're raiding what is the Apple Records.
Well, now, George Harrison had a big connection to Monty Python because his film company, when it first started up, were the ones who were putting out the Monty Python films.
Ah, right. So they were already friends and stuff. So no wonder he was down with it. Now, I guess this would be a good time to kind of talk about the other members of the Beatles and what they thought of this, right? Like John Lennon.
Oh, gives a rat's ass.
John Lennon
thought of it. He probably
was kind of like, obviously one eyebrow up, going, now what are we doing here? What is this? You know, but he loved it so much that he refused to return the videotape of the film and the cassette tape of the soundtrack.
He's really?
Like, oh no, this is awesome.
Mine.
Ringo Starr dug it, except for the parts where, you know, things go badly. And it's like, that hit a little too close to home. But
right.
But Paul McCartney, not a fan.
Of course,
doesn't that seem right?
No, like, don't make fun of Macca.
Yeah, yeah.
Sir Macca.
Yeah. Well, the Ruddles said, I don't know what this was about. Linda and I were watching the telly one night, and suddenly, well, it looks like us, doesn't it? Yeah, bobbity bobbity boo and all that.
I don't like it at all.
I don't like it at all.
That makes us look like buffoons.
I look over across the couch. Linda's laughing.
At me?
She liked it. I said, Linda, why are you laughing? She said, I don't know. It's funny, isn't it? I said, it's not funny at all. Boppity boppity boo and all that. Laughing across the couch she was.
She wasn't laughing with me. She was laughing at me.
But she really enjoyed it. So I began to enjoy it as well. And later, I liked it. That's what I did. I liked it. Linda decided I would like it.
Yeah, and then I shaved her.
What?
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. Okay. Speaking of that Saturday Night Live connection on this side of the pond, there's a lot of SNL cast members that are also appearing in this. John Belushi plays Ron DeKline, which is based on Alan Klein.
I forgot about his part.
Remember
in
that scene? It's hilarious.
That's really good. I forgot about that.
So ruthless, people commit suicide rather than meet with him. Bill Murray plays DJ Bill Murray the K, which is, he's like touting how great the Ruddles are. Dan Aykroyd is a label exec that turned down the Ruddles because guitar music was over. Gilda Radner is sort of interviewed on the street and accosted by the interviewee, which is played by Eric Idle. Eric Idle takes both roles as the Paul McCartney and like the narrator host of the documentary, which is the only thing I don't like about it.
Really?
They should have had a different Paul McCartney.
John Cleese. Well, he does a good McCartney. I think they may have
should
have had
good
John
McCartney.
Cleese. John Cleese would have been great for the interviewer guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking for
the host, the narrator.
Eric Idle's really good as the interviewer. I thought he was better at that than the Paul McCartney, but you're right. Like, John Cleese would have been able to do that as well. So, I don't know. What can you play off of here? You're going to hear basically a Beatles parody. My favorite is Double Back Alley. Do you know that one?
Yes. Is that the one, Penny Lane?
It's basically a spinoff of Penny Lane.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like Ouch just because it's stupid.
Double Back Alley, the reason why I chose it, because it's like you could take that as a standalone song and go, That's a really well-written song.
I was just going to say, it's the only, not the only, but I think it's song-wise the best song on the record as songs
right.
go.
Right. And what's the guy? Neil Innes. Neil Innes. What a genius, this guy. And he still performs like these Ruttle songs.
Well, he worked with the Pythons on not only their movies, but also, remember the Secret Policeman's Ball?
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
And so he was involved in that. So he was kind of always a music coordinator, if you will, of the Python.
Yes, he did. I read
collectively or individually.
I read an interview with Neil, and he was talking about one of his favorite things ever is that when he was on a Monty Python skit, he learned that Elvis Presley was a huge Monty Python fan and could quote it at the drop of a hat.
Oh, cool.
And he quoted one of the characters that Neil played as like, the king was quoting me, like impersonating my character.
Now, how would Elvis do Monty Python?
Well, go for
it. What sort of man is can summon tinder? Summon fire without flint nor tinder. Come back, it's just a flesh wound. I'm Tim the Enchanter. You English bedwetting type.
Play the record, okay?
All right. People were proud in Double Black Valley. Neighbors were loud, but ever so pally. People would shout, joking about smoking the soot. Mother would put the milk bottles out. We had a good time in Double Black Valley with Princess Decline.
Ryan
is dashing across this room like what, flash dance or whatever.
I was dancing. I had to pull that bucket of water down on me.
Ooh, yeah. He's a maniac on the floor.
Thank
Ooh.
You, Liz. That was a Christmas present from Liz, and I've been really enjoying
cool.
it for these
I
last
like
few
it.
Weeks, so thank you. And everybody can go check out All You Need Is Cash.
It is a fun experience.
On YouTube.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it on the way home.
I mean, if you listen, if you like, yeah, great.
Great. Look out, Phoenix drivers.
You've been warned.
I'm going to put my little phone right.
Yeah, right on the steering wheel. So if you turn right, you turn your head.
If you like that wry British wit, you will love.
Absolutely
love that. All right, AD, what are you bringing to the table?
Well, I've got big fun in this mystery box over here. I think it rocks balls, and you will too, I guarantee. I've got an album by a group that suffers. I don't know. You will discuss it, I suppose. But is it golden earring syndrome, or are they a legit one-hit wonder? That's the question.
Reset what golden earring syndrome is for those that have not heard that before?
Okay, golden earring syndrome isn't quite a one-hit wonder. Golden earring syndrome, when you say golden earring, everybody goes Radar Love.
Mm-hmm.
One hit, but then there's that when the bullet hits a bone. So there's actually a couple. And a lot of bands get lumped into that, you know, that one-hit wonder thing. It's like they have had a couple on the charts, so it's not quite. It's almost one-hit wonder, but not quite. Well, this band...
Wham.
Are you just making sound effects over there, or are you making a point? Kapow! Just every once in a while she blurts out, oof! Okay. So,
well, bam.
Okay. So, Wham.
Wham. Everybody knows that one song. By Wham.
I don't even know any of them. What
did
they do?
Wake me up.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. What's the other one? What other one did they do?
Careless Whisper, baby.
That was George Michael. That was.
Was that
Wham.
A solo song?
Yeah. That was.
Okay.
So what was the other? Wham had another one.
Yeah, they had to have had another one.
Can't remember.
Are you sure Careless Whisper wasn't a Wham song?
Yeah.
I think it's on the album, isn't it?
Maybe.
Michelle.
But again, you
where
know,
are you?
Again, not one hit, though, right? So,
okay, sure,
again,
sure,
that kind of makes your kapow, your point.
Kapow.
Kind of makes your point about the, you know, them being golden earring syndrome rather than one hit wonder. So, yeah, so two hits or more. But there's always everybody knows them for the one, just the one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And forgets about all the other ones. So this band would fall into that category, okay? Known worldwide for that one rock borderline hit. But they were considered more of a hard rock prog band. This London band, Secret Weapon, comes in the form of guitarist, singer, songwriter Russ Ballard. And I am talking, of course, about...
Hello, right? Is it Hello?
Argent. He was in Hello
before,
yes.
Argent.
Yes.
You found... Is that the first one? Because that looks pretty cool, that album.
No, this is the last one that Ballard did with them, studio-wise, anyway. This is their fifth album. I have been getting so into them. I've got a couple now. I've got In Deep by them, which is the one with, I won't say the word yet, the song, because we're going to talk about that.
Okay, you want to table that for now?
Yeah,
I know what
you're
talking about. Kiss fans.
Yeah, this is an album called Nexus. And of course, God, let's talk about Ace Frehley syndrome on this, or Mel Shocker syndrome.
This looks like it's water damaged a little bit, this cover.
Yeah, no one else is.
Whoa!
Water. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, how long's it gonna take you there?
God, well, I don't go right for the crotch.
Yeah, there's the entire album cover is black, and his pants are bright yellow.
God Almighty! Oof. So he's a Christian man.
There's a yes, he's a
Catholic man.
There's man cleavage on this one for you, Liz. You can inspect this.
That is quite a tater.
That's a pair of taters.
Here you go.
It's quite a loaf
is
you're cooking there.
The album called Tater?
It's called, yes.
Call me Tater.
Rod Argent is...
Ow.
What do you think, Liz? Ow. Ouch. Play the Ruddles song now.
Yes. Wham Ouch. Indeed, Liz. Wham indeed. This is their fifth studio album. Now the band was the band that formed... In, what was it, like 60 freaking, I don't know, 66 or something, 65, 66, is the same band that went up through all of their studio albums, including this fifth one, then they did a live album. That's when Ballard bailed, and they did two more after that. But this is still the original band. It was Rod Argent on guitar, I'm sorry, keyboards and lead and back vocals. Jim Rodford on bass, who was Rod Argent's cousin. Then a guy, Robert Henrit, on drums. And, of course, then the aforementioned Russ Ballard, the guitar player, lead and backing vocals also. So this band was kind of a two-faction band. It was almost like Rod Argent took care of the proggy stuff. He's like, I'll write that stuff. You write this stuff. And then Russ Ballard wrote the rock hits and the more ballady stuff. So it was almost a... like I said, a two-faction band where Ballard had a songwriting partner, this guy Chris White. And Chris White was the bass player and producer for the Zombies. Now, Rod Argent was in the Zombies,
yes,
prior to forming Argent, and
yeah,
who also had two hits.
Great, great band,
yeah,
Zombies.
Yeah, Time of the Season, and what was the other one? She's Not There.
She's Not There.
Yeah.
Odyssey and Oracle.
More, yeah.
Odyssey and Oracle, great record.
So, you know, the Zombies split in 67. That's when Argent formed this band. Russ Ballard was in Hello. And he was in a bunch of bands prior to that as writer and utility guy. Very popular London artists who are
still
selling
kicking.
Records.
Still,
absolutely.
I think they're doing the Zombies again. Him and the singer of the Zombies, right?
They actually had put Argent together, the original members.
Oh, okay.
At one point. And I think they are doing the Zombies again. What's left
every
of
once
them.
In a while. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's worth it, dude. I mean, you know, they're doing all these, yeah, these nostalgia tours everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, might as well do it. But yeah, they actually put the four original members of Argent are still alive and well, and they put the band back together and actually released some later stuff. I haven't checked any of it out yet, but I've really gotten into these guys of late. And because of the fact that it is Rod Argent, the keyboard player, who is the prog guy, but is so heavily reliant on the guitar. So it really does sort of, it's like if Deep Purple were more prog. So they have some instrumental songs that are, you know, pretty much Chris White and Rod Argent written, and then they split the writing. So, like, on this album, side two is definitely a stronger side. Side one has three Rod Argent songs, or Argent and White songs, and one Russ Ballard song. Side two has three Russ Ballard songs.
He was more of the pop guy.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Yeah.
So they were definitely divided into two factions. And you don't even have to look. You can just listen to whatever song's on. You go, Argent and White.
Oh, okay.
You know, immediately you know, because there's a pop edge or a rock edge to it. You know, more of a hard rock edge, whereas as opposed to more pure prog and stuff. But even the prog doesn't get goofy and over the top. I mean, I know how you don't, or you're not really a fan of Emerson, Lake, and problem. And they never really go there. There's still good enough guitar support in there.
Well, there's a guitar there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. What's your take? You're not an Argent fan,
I don't know much about these records. I've not purchased any Argent records. I am curious because when you played, is it In Too Deep is the name of the album?
In Deep.
In
yeah.
Deep. I was curious at the track you played. I feel like I don't know where to start with them. You know,
right,
like
right.
I'm a fan of the Zombies. So I like Ron Argent. He looks like Jim Dandy on this freaking album,
yes,
right
does.
Now. Is he even playing the B3? Because the B3 is obscured by another picture here. He looks like he's just the lead singer with he's shirtless.
It looks like he's riding on a mechanical bull. If you got rid of the keyboards,
it could be Urban Cowboy.
Yes, right.
Yeah,
yes,
I was going to say he looks like a cross between Jim Dandy and a Greg Giuffria.
Greg Giuffria, yeah. That's very, except he's brunette, not blonde. But, yeah, but
God, so, I mean,
that
the band,
that this cover is an abomination.
The band was around. They, like I said,
I feel like I'm is a fucking gynecologist.
Ace Frehley, Mel Shocker. That goes in the ranks of those. We need some sort of Ball of Fame. Like list, right? Wouldn't that be cool to have
the Ball of Fame,
Chevy Road Ball of Fame?
The copies,
like, yeah,
or
right,
no,
yeah.
Mel Shocker and Ace Frehley and Ron Argent. Boy,
like,
oh boy, Chevy Award,
right? the Ball of Fame award this year goes to.
Certainly Ace takes it.
Well, so anyway, I think I said earlier 67 or something. That's when Zombies broke up. So 69 through 76, they put out the seven studio albums and a live album. Which is pretty good. Once Ballard split, though, he split in 74. After this album, they did one live album, and that was it. He was done. They did two more with a couple other guys. But much like, I mean, his value really is inherent like a Lindsey Buckingham. When Fleetwood Mac just let him go, they had to get two guys to replace him. It was the same with Russ Ballard. They got a lead singer and a guitar player because it's just he's that good.
When Russ is out of the band— Are we done with Argent at that point?
I am, because I listened to some of the newer stuff.
The new guys, new guys come in.
And it just wasn't the same. Okay. But it also encouraged me to go, listen, you know what? This guy's got a few solo records out that I'm going to check out.
Russ
Ballard's got it, and you can find them.
Third Z is right now, right across the street from you.
Absolutely,
they're down there. There was three of them, but I just don't know.
He's a great songwriter. Now, okay,
who's the singer? Who sings "Hold Your Head Up"?
That's
is that Ron or
no?
Is
that's
Russ Ballard.
Russ Ballard singing that.
So if you feel,
yeah,
that's him. Okay, so no wonder he got a record deal.
Right, so. That's the one
hit
wonder, right? What's their other big hit that Russ Ballard wrote, by the way?
Well, I guess it would be God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
Absolutely.
Kiss fans would know God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
Now, let's talk about
it. Was that a hit, though? It wasn't a hit.
It was in England, it was a bigger hit than it was in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now let's talk about his writing and his connection, Russ Ballard, to Kiss. Okay. He wrote God Gave Rock and Roll to You, okay. And the original version, he writes, he name checks Cliff Richards. Remember the British pop star? He goes, yeah. don't step on snails, don't climb in trees, love Cliff Richard, but please don't tease. It's never too late to change your mind.
Yeah, okay. Bob Ezrin's like, fuck that line.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Ballard's contributions to Team Kiss was God Gave Rock and Roll to You. He also wrote Ace Frehley's New York Groove.
That's right. Oh. There's a ball connection here.
Yeah, there absolutely is. Right on the nuts, Ryan. Nuts.
Thank you.
Okay.
I chose to ignore it.
He also wrote Ace Frehley's on the Frehley's Comet record, Into the Night.
Oh, that's the other one. I was trying to think of I knew New York Groove, but I forgot about Into the Night.
He also has two songs on Peter Criss's 1982 solo release.
Nice.
Let Me Owl Rock You.
Let Me Rock You.
Oh, yes.
Not Let Me Owl Rock
You. Right. Maybe I misspelled that. I'm sorry. He wrote the title track.
Yeah. That's the title track.
And
right
he
there.
Also
That's
wrote the song starts. Some Kind of Hurricane. Hurricane.
Hurricane,
right. Nice. So Russ Ballard has, you know, kind of got into the Kiss family there, and
he did.
They turned to him and said, "Hey, we need some singles.
Listen, we can't write songs no more. We're so tired. Just cranking out albums left and right."
That's right.
Paul Stanley Costello.
Anyway,
but also, I mean, so now he's out of, you know, and the thing is, what I liked about Ballard, he was really loyal to the Argent thing. He was writing so much stuff for so many other people. Prior to, during, and of course, well after the Argent project. So other people that he wrote for was Agnetha Faltskog, who's the hot blonde ABBA chick. He wrote some shit for her.
Oh.
He wrote for Bay City Rollers, Roger Daltrey, Night Ranger. He wrote for Girl, Phil Collins' old band.
Yeah.
He wrote for Santana.
Ooh,
like Russ Ballard.
Did you like Russ Ballard's song that he contributed?
Santana liked him.
I feel like that's probably later period.
See.
Okay.
He wrote for Uriah Heep. He wrote for Rare Earth. And now check that. So those are bands, but song by song. Remember that? I know there's something going on. That big
I
hit
like that
in the
song.
80s. That was, you know who that was? That was the other ABBA chick, the black-haired ABBA chick. That was Frida, who was actually a fake name for Annefrid Lyngstad, who was the brunette Abichek. So he wrote that. Russ Ballard wrote that.
It's got those huge drums
yep.
with the gated reverb.
Yeah.
that you love.
I know, great pop song.
It is a good
pop song. He wrote Liar by Three Dog Night.
Oh, shit. Really?
He
oh,
wrote wow. Someday We'll Be Together.
I don't know that one.
What?
Diana Ross?
Pointer Sisters wrote the version
oh,
of that.
Oh, oh.
He wrote Judas Priest, Take These Chains Off, right?
Oh, that
Take
had to
them over my heart.
Did he write that for them?
He
or?
Wrote for them. He wrote that for Priest.
Really?
He also wrote two of Rainbow's biggest hits, I Surrender and Since You've Been Gone.
No really? Shit.
Dude, right? So this guy, this Russ Ballard, I'm a fan. I'm a Russ
I knew
fucking
he was
Ballard
a,
fan, dude.
I knew he was a badass, but wow, what a catalog.
Right? I mean, so...
He knows the big hooks.
Let's grab the bull by the balls and let's spin some Russ Ballard. Russ Ballard. You know, it's funny. Ballard. His first four letters of his name is B-A-L-L-A-R-D.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to play. This is arguably their best record. I know Side 2 is just...
Dynamite.
Fantastic. I would recommend... I'm getting so into Argent and I'm... So into Russ Ballard now. I'm just kind of a new convert.
You should go to Zia's,
convert.
Man. His records are there.
I'm
going right to
pick
now.
Him up. I see him all the time. I just passed him by. I knew who he was, but I'm just like, you know what? Now that I'm digging the Argent stuff, I'm going to go in deep. So let's do Side 2, Ryan.
All right.
Track 1, we're going to do Thunder and Lightning. This is, of course, Russ Ballard's song, produced by Rod Argent and Chris White from the Nexus album, 1974, on Epic Records. This is great. This is a – dude, this is balls out. This will make up for your – cut for sure. Yay.
We'll be right back.
Fuck yeah. Argent.
I like that. That's got a cool 70s vibe to it. That's for sure.
It's great, man.
Wasn't 100% on board with all the keyboard tones Ron Argent was putting out.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's cutting edge for 74, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
And it wasn't quite dialed in.
He's locking, no, not yet, But I mean, that's the thing. Again, the band functioned in two factions, I should say. And I'm on Team Ballard, or Ballard, if you will. I like Russ Ballard. I'm a fan, and as a result, I'm an Argent fan. I think collectively as a group, he kept Rod Argent from going too far astray.
And yeah, kind of reined him in.
I think the band benefited by no
well,
doubt.
They kept their record deal. I imagine the record label was like, we need some hits.
Right, so. And both are writers, but we're completely in different directions. And I think that's what made them cohesive. And I didn't get it at the time. I do now. It's kind of cool. It's fun going
Interesting.
Back. Yeah. Nexus was the album by Argent, 74. The song's called Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah, it was. All right, well, I think I'm ready to completely reveal what my mystery box is all about. And it's, who do you think you are? What are you doing? So the first band, obviously, the Ruttles. I mean, what are you, the Beatles?
Right.
So I've got another band where I could say, what are you, the Beatles? It's basically Beatles parody night here in my mystery box. I brought a little record called Deface the Music by Utopia. I thought if I'm bringing the Ruttles and we're doing a twofer tonight, Utopia is the perfect choice for the second record. Deface the Music from 1980. This, again, is a Beatles parody record, a divisive album that I brought on episode 40 of the Shabby Road Record Show.
I remember that.
Season 2. Go back and check that out at the website. Now, here's why I do a 180 on this record. I originally bought this record because I'm a huge Todd Rundgren fan. Mm-hmm. I was leery of the whole Utopia thing because I'm not a new wave fan. And that's kind of what Utopia becomes, right? In the late 70s.
Yes, you could say that.
With Adventures in Utopia Oops, Wrong Planet and the like.
Went from Prague to new wave.
Right. It became less 70s. And more forward-thinking, looking right at those 1980s and go, we're coming for you, 80s. And that was kind of like the Utopia thing. But then I'm like,
oh, look, I found a Lindrum machine.
Exactly. Yeah. So, which I don't mind, really. It depends on the artist. Like, if Kiss uses one,
you use it.
Fuck you.
Right.
But if, like, the guys from that era use it, then it makes sense. But so I find this record to face the music. So Todd does a Beatles pastiche record in 1980. Well, Todd's old enough to have, been like a 16-year-old when the Beatles were new, or 15-year-old.
Sure.
And he was inspired by them, but it wasn't long before he had his own record deal making the records by a group called the Nazz, right? Or Nazz.
Right.
And so he's almost a contemporary. So I'm like, so he rejected... In 1980, he was kind of rejecting the 80s and made a Beatles pastiche record. I like that. I'm interested in that. I will buy that. And I like that. But now, AD, as I spoke about on our last episode, I'm a Utopia fan. I like what they're doing.
I do, too.
On Adventures in Utopia and Oops, Wrong Planet.
Sure. Great, 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 great. Both of which I just found.
Good. Yeah. Now I'm cool with those records. Because I get what they're doing.
Sure.
And they're hooky. And they're goofy.
Now, when we went and saw them, you and Michelle were gracious enough to take me on my birthday to go see Utopia. Mm-hmm. And they played a song from every Utopia record except
for
this one.
This one.
Interestingly.
So I have done a 180, and I don't wholeheartedly reject this album, but I think it is a colossal misstep in their career.
Oh,
I think it's a horrible idea.
I don't think it's a step. I think it's a one-off. I think it's we can do this too.
No, because they just had their first hit single on the 1979 album.
Sure.
Which was Set Me Free was like a top 20 single.
Sure.
And the record label's like, all right, Utopia, what do you got for me now? we're doing like Beatles sounding stuff. No!
God, see, Todd Rundgren, thumbs up. Fuck you. Like, yeah, right.
I guess you're right. He's like, I'm going to do what I want.
Come on, yeah.
But it's telling that they don't do anything off this album on this reunion tour from last year that
because
we saw.
Because it was a one-off. It was, because, and yes, they had to put out a Utopia album, but they're going, huddle up, guys. And the four of them are sitting there going, okay, this isn't really a Utopia record. We're just going to do this. Make these fuckers happy. But we're going to put it out. It's going to be awesome. And if anybody bitches, you just go fuck you.
No. I think the guys in Utopia were fucking pissed. Like, we're doing what? No, no. I own the studio, and I'm writing half the songs.
You
so.
Think, were there interviews? I mean, did they bitch about it? Like, what about, like...
If you're
easy payday for Willie.
True.
Come on.
If you're the bass player Chasm, who sings a lot on this album,
right.
You've got to be disappointed because he sang the hit single, right? And you got to go, oh, really? We're doing this?
It probably took him a week to do this. Is all they're going? Fuck yeah, Todd, we'll come in and do that.
Yeah, this is a very divisive record. Obviously, as we just, I brought it out, we instantly started fighting.
I would almost argue it's not really a Utopia record. But it
should
only
be
by
a
name.
Just Todd Rundgren should have put it out under Todd Rundgren.
Right, yes.
Yeah, because it's so Todd Rundgren for him to do something like this, right?
And any group of musicians besides these other three guys in particular, in specific,
but it's
could
a four. It's a four-piece band. It's a four Everybody piece. Sings. It's guitar, bass, drums. You know,
I say it was a
sense.
Fuck you to the label. That's what I say it was.
Why? Every other record's a fuck you to Bearsville Records. That's why your Todd Rundgren collection ends at when Bearsville's not in the picture anymore.
Yeah, because what's the fun in that?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I've done kind of a 180 on this record, and I go, I get it. That's why a lot of people don't like this record, because they were on a great trajectory with the last two Utopia records in terms of making hit records.
They want to make hit records.
Like,
that's the thing.
That.
That's the point. That was Todd Rundgren is the anti-rock star.
True.
As opposed to the uncle rock star.
So allmusic.com gives this album a glowing review, and it compares it to the Ruddles. But hinting that this is a superior and more credible album than the Ruddles for whatever reason. Because I think there isn't the thing where we're going to make it sound like a Beatles record. Like, the Ruddles took care, as you heard in the earlier track, to sonically really kind of reproduce it. Todd does a little bit of that, but it's still, in some instances on this record, it feels like an album from 1980. So when it... It's so weird. It's like, these songs, they should have been like really polished up in the new wave sense. I can't believe I'm saying this, because whatever I said, I didn't listen to episode 40, but I'm sure it's the complete opposite. It should be a new wave record with these hooks.
You're not allowed to like a record then not like it. You can not like a record then like it.
But you're not around.
No, you know, no, you can't do that.
It is a good record. Okay. I mean, it's a good batch of songs.
Okay, boom. Right?
Okay, all right. I get it. finishing out the thing about All Music, it says, and I like this idea of this record. It says it feels more like a burst of cynical joy that is damn near impossible to resist.
I like this record.
You like this record?
I love this record.
Okay. So there's a song called Alone on Side One, which is the And I Love Her analog that Chasm sings, and he sounds like Emmett Rhodes. That's a fucking Emmett Rhodes song. If you go back to that record, check out that song called Alone. It sounds like Chasm's voice and Emmett Rhodes.
How great is that?
It's very good. That works.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, there's things. Not everything works. Like, for example, the first track, I Just Want to Touch You, which was written by Todd for the soundtrack to the film Roadie, starring Meatloaf, remember?
Oh, yeah. Saw that. Alice Cooper was in that.
Alice Cooper,
Debbie Harry was in that.
Mm-hmm. It was rejected by the movie's producers for fear of legal action because it sounded so much like the Beatles. We're going to get sued.
So you can see what he's doing. That's Todd. Todd Rundgren does not do stuff by accident.
No.
And that's why.
It's always very purposeful, and he's all in.
Right.
Which I love Todd Rundgren. He's one of my favorite dudes. So I would be amiss, and I'm sure I talked about a lot of this stuff on episode 40, but I mean, it's been 160 episodes ago, but whatever. Because he's talking about, we're doing like a Beatles pastiche that he did, but just a few years before he did this, he got into a spat with John Lennon in Melody Maker, a magazine in the UK. Do you remember this?
No.
Oh, Todd Rundgren.
Like, one week after, like, writing letters to the editor?
So there was an interview with Todd Rundgren in Melody Maker in 1974, and in which Todd lambasted John Lennon. And then John Lennon wrote an open letter to Todd Rundgren, and it was published in the same magazine, or like, a month later.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So would you like to hear some of the tête-à-tête?
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Well, you start with Todd, right? Todd, the first hurl?
Yes.
First stone, if you will.
And let's before I read the...
Wham!
Before I read the quote, I will mention that Todd is promoting at this time either the Todd album, but a lot of this is spurred on by a song called Rock and Roll Pussy,
right,
which is on A Wizard, A True Star, yes, which is Todd's masterpiece, where he's railing on John Lennon in the lyrics of that. And that song is about, you're just a rock and roll pussy. And so, anyway, quote, John Lennon ain't no revolutionary. He's a fucking idiot, man. Shouting about revolution and acting like an ass, it just makes people feel uncomfortable. All he really wants to do is get attention for himself. And if revolution gets him that attention, he'll get attention through revolution. Hitting a waitress at the Troubadour? What kind of revolution is that? He's an important figure, sure. But so was Richard Nixon. Nixon was just another generation's John Lennon, someone who represented all sorts of ideals, but was out for himself underneath it all. Like, the Beatles had no style other than being the Beatles. So the Nas used to do, like, heavy rock and all these light, pretty ballads with complex ballads and stuff. And at the time, that was something that people just didn't do. You were supposed to have an easily associable style. That's what the interview said in part.
Dang.
John Lennon.
Oh.
Yay.
Which, John Lennon's a douche. I think we can all agree.
He's, yeah.
But he is witty.
Yes.
And
he's a murderer.
I love...
He's killed fuckers.
That's right. On the old live show. Yeah, we chronicled a lot of the Beatles' murders.
Oh, my God.
Posthumously.
Yes.
Todd's a brave soul.
Yes. But so acidic and just so like, fuck you, uh-huh, is John Lennon here. Dear Todd.
Oh, directly.
Yay.
See, I like Todd was talking to all of us.
Yeah. Now.
John's talking to Todd. Dear. That's cool. I like that, uh-huh, right off the bat.
Dear Todd, I like you and some of your work, including I Saw the Light, which is not unlike There's a Place, Beatles song, melody-wise. Number one, I have never claimed to be a revolutionary, but I'm allowed to sing about anything I want, right? Number two, I never hit a waitress at the Troubadour. I did act like an ass. I was too drunk. So shoot me. Number three. I guess we're all looking for attention, Rod. Oh. Do you really think that I don't know how to get it? Without revolution, quote unquote? I could dye my hair purple and green and pink for a start. Which, editor's note here, Todd Rundgren appeared on the Midnight Special with that color hair.
Yeah.
Number four. I don't represent anyone but myself. It sounds like I represented something to you or you wouldn't be so violent towards me. Your dad, perhaps? Number five.
Daddy issues.
Yes, Dodd. Violence comes in mysterious ways. It's wonders to perform, including verbal. But you'd know that. Kind of a mind game, wouldn't you? Of course you would. Number six. So the Naz used to do like heavy rock, then suddenly a light, pretty ballad. How original. Number seven. Which gets me to the Beatles, who had no other style than being the Beatles? That covers a lot of styles, man, including your own to date.
Whoa!
Yes.
Damn. That's, you know what? Wham!
Yeah. Yes, God. The one thing.
You know what? Hang on. Real quick. I like how he doesn't get his name right because I don't even know who you are. Mm. Kind of. Oh, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're not even worth getting. Oh, who? What's your name again?
Yeah.
I love that. That in itself is such a great backhand.
You're awful pretty when you get mad.
The one thing. Yes, God. The one thing those Beatles did was to affect people's minds. Maybe you need another fix. Somebody played me your rock and roll pussy song, but I never noticed anything. I think the real reason you're mad at me is because I didn't know who you were at the Rainbow in L.A. Remember that time you came in with Wolfman Jack? When I found out later, I was cursing because I wanted to tell you how good you were. I'd heard you on the radio. Anyway, however much you hurt me, darling, I'll always love you, JL.
Yeah.
That's, he was a badass. Right. I got to give him that. That's, he was a douche. My God.
You know what? That's a great fuck you. And you know what it is? John Lennon probably did like him. What if Harry Nilsson had treated Lennon that way?
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah.
Wow, that's some heavy shit.
I'm on both sides of the fence here.
Todd. Yeah. Rod, Bod, Dodd.
I'm just glad we have that letter. You know, it's so great. It was worth Todd being a douche, because Todd's no angel.
Oh, come on, right? What did he say about the Dolls at one point in time?
Took the take. He produced the first Dolls record.
The
take that he would use on any given song was the one that didn't make him throw up.
Right. So there.
Whatever.
So then a few years... Now, it was all diffused via a very short phone call, and obviously Todd acquiesced out, you know, John Lennon, and it's like, yeah, I like you, man. And it's like, I like you too. It's like, I don't know, the press, blah, blah, blah. And the Melody Maker couldn't wait to just publish it all and ramp it all up, of course. So, you know, it is what it is. Take it at face value or what have you. But we're going to hear Todd doing a song written by John Lennon, basically. I mean, it's Ticket to Ride, their version of Ticket to Ride. Take It Home from the Deface the Music album, 1980, Utopia.
I like this. Don't discount this record, Ryan.
It's part of my...
I'm not going to let you.
I don't discount it, but it has fallen from grace.
Oh!
I put it up on a pedestal. I put it lower. I feel like it's better than Swing to the Right, which followed it.
Oh, definitely. It is.
Yeah.
But remember, it's your beloved, our beloved Todd Rundgren making a statement to the record label, making a statement about, let's not get all fancy pants with this Utopia thing. We're not going to go rock star with this shit. Mm-hmm. So don't get all excited here. Here's a bunch of fucking hit Beatles songs.
Ultimately, it's a frustrating album. The band would have been better off taking these hooks, framing them in the contemporary sound of the era, sans all the Beatle tropes, which they successfully did a few years later on that 1983 self-titled record, which is a bit spotty.
The Utopia, it's second got a, Utopia record.
Yes, 83. It's the white background. Yeah. It's totally 80s looking.
Okay. So again, with this same exact album without the Utopia personnel, would it be as good a record?
We're
into New York Dolls territory here.
No, it wouldn't
be. With the last...
It's the production. Like, you need to play a this sounding riff to make it sound like Strawberry Fields Forever.
Right, right.
That's, and it's got to be a quarter note string but pattern to emulate Eleanor Rigby. So fuck that. It's like, this is a good hook. Why do you have to put a dun dun junk dun, dun, like make it sound like Eleanor Rigby? You could do something else with it.
Because
that's my frustration with this record.
Because it was Todd Rundgren being an asshole.
He hates right? John Lennon.
I know. I love Lennon. He's an asshole. I love Rundgren. He's an asshole.
Right.
But this is him at his assholiest.
Yeah.
And it's great. For why he did it. I don't know. Come on, Ryan. Climb back on.
You know I don't. I'm not going to say it sucks.
Right?
I like it.
You can't.
But I feel like there now, because I'm a fan of the album, the new wave stuff that happened.
Different band. Different concept.
Yeah, well, I can't do that. Take It Home by Utopia. Deface the Music, 1980. You be the judge, everybody. Let us know what you think of it. I'd love to hear people's response. Right? About this stuff. I think this is a good pop tune.
Listen,
why would you do a riff?
You just can't not like a record when you liked it. You just can't. That's a rule about it.
Yes, I can.
You can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No,
you can't. Yes, I can. And I forgot to mention that Todd Rundgren got in a fight with George Harrison, too. He's taken down two Beatles in his lifetime.
And George is the murderiest of all the Beatles.
Oh,
he's got the most kills.
He's got the most hand grenades.
Yes.
That was a
veritable arsenal. George Arsenal Harrison.
It was over that Badfinger album. Is it Straight Up that Rundgren half-produced?
Yes.
That Harrison started, and then Todd Rundgren just railed on how poorly it was produced.
Oh, I came in and fixed your shit.
I think
Beetle George.
Beetle George. Who is the nicest Beetle? Like, what?
I don't know.
That to people.
Yeah. Because, you know,
he really wasn't into it. I mean, come on. He's taken down two Beatles. But he's been a longtime member of Ringo Starr's All-Star Band. He's been doing that for 20 years.
So what does Ringo have on him?
No, Ringo's just Ringo. He's like, all the other Beatles.
He's going to get to Paul. I wonder what Paul McCartney and Todd Rundgren think of each other.
Exactly. That's going to be a big showdown before one.
That is a big boppity boppity.
He screens his calls.
All right, AD, you got?
Well.
Oh, that was Utopia. 1980, what was it? Take It Home.
It's a great record, though.
Deface the Music.
Don't not like it, Ryan. Come on. Don't stop liking it.
You know I like everything Todd Rundgren.
Don't stop believing.
All right, what you got?
All right. So what I got, I'm patting my mystery box right here.
Is this your special story about, like, you traveled through decades and
it's just a little story of an elusive song, like this earworm. Like you know, let's say you ever had a dream and there's somebody in your dream and you remember the dream and it may be this fictional character that your brain thought up, but you're so intrigued by it. And when you wake up, you're fascinated by that person. And you carry that with you, the thought of the effect that it had on you, like what even was that, or who was that, or does that even exist? And you know, and every once in a while in your life, little things pop up, and it reminds you of that, just when you thought you forgot about it. You go, forgot about that. Sort of almost like a virus that we carry with us. And every once in a while, it pops up. You go, got to take care of that. You can't really get rid of it. You just lives in you, and this song is that. It's
I can't wait to see what you're pulling out here.
It's just so weird. So what I have here is a record by a band who I'm like, oh, that's that. I fell in love with them once I figured out who the fuck they were, and hopefully they are becoming a shabby favorite. Now, they've been played here. I believe this is the fifth, maybe sixth time. I want to say fifth time. This selection will also include a time signature challenge. Don't forget. Now, don't let me forget that, because I will.
Love these.
So this is a band in which all four band members contribute to the songwriting and vocals. They're fun. They're relaxed. It's unforced. There's a level of smooth, easy, fun, groovy, grin, happy. Your face hurts from smiling. That this band achieves that very few others, I believe, can claim. They play blues without the obligatory complaining. They play jazz and swing without
a complaining
or whatever.
Just kind of getting it out.
Yeah, whatever. But they play jazz and swing without forcing tempos and like pseudo intellectual snobbery. They play pop with a tongue in cheek delivery wrapped in a sense of humor and sort of inclusiveness that makes them almost the brunt of the joke. It's almost self-deprecatingly simple, yet it's absolutely, if you're a musician and a songwriter, simply brilliant, if that makes sense, if I can turn that on its ear. They even dip their toes into Tin Pan Alley styles and come out sounding genuine as opposed to contrived. So I'm talking about Louisville, Kentucky's own new rhythm and blues quartet, otherwise known as NRBQ, Ryan.
Oh, wow. I always thought they were East Coast.
Well, okay. They and now in my intro at the beginning of the show, like talking about my mystery box, I said Louisville via Boston.
Okay.
They went from Louisville, they moved down to Miami to sort of try to become, you know, the songwriting machine and catch the wave of the, you know, the Miami thing. Santana requested them. Colombia. And then he ended up going up the East Coast to New York, Long Island, kind of kicked around the upper East Coast.
They weren't afraid to move, pull up stakes.
Right, and they ended up in Boston. And this, of course, is on Rounder Records, which is based out of Boston.
NRBQ.
New Rhythm and Blues Quartet. Now, let me tell you about the song. Now, the album. This is their seventh studio album, 1980 it came out. It's called Tiddlywinks, Ryan. Check it out.
All right. My favorite thing about NRBQ is that the Simpsons loved NRBQ, and those songs come up all the time.
Everyone loves them.
Yeah.
And the thing is, now, my last band, Argent, we talked about how there was all original members and the loyalty. This band is the same way. It was pretty much not only, but pretty fucking much the same four guys the whole time. And that created that camaraderie, that sound. They all wrote, they all sang, they all contributed. So, oh yeah, I wrote my notes. This is the fifth time. So check out episodes 20, 63, 97, and 137. Write that down because I gave the history. This has nothing
that
to do.
That is very presumptuous.
Yeah, especially if you're driving.
Yes.
ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com.
Okay, but let me.
They're all
okay.
There.
So, but my point is we've talked about the band, where they're from, and the list of things and blah, 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 blah. I want to talk about when I first heard this band.
Okay,
I never
good.
Talked about that. Like NRBQ. Like, what the fuck? And it's funny because this song became an earworm. It was one of those songs I'm like, who the fuck is that? And not only I became obsessed with it, I became almost kind of, I don't know, maybe I need pills because of it. I mean, it was one
you
of those things that drove me
for many reasons.
Right, but drove me nuts at the time. I'm like, who the fuck is this? And back in 1980, you couldn't Wikipedia that. No. You could call the radio station. They go, I don't know. Well, no, it was between the hours of blah, 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 today. Yeah, we got archives. You want to come down and look at them yourself? Yeah, I can. We you don't have access to them, so you can't. And you're going, fuck. So, okay, so here's what. The first time I heard this song that I'm going to play, that I finally found this record 2 weeks ago, I'm grinning. I was sitting outside a 7-Eleven convenience store in Gaithersburg, Maryland, where I had just moved, in with my new girlfriend, / soon-to-be mother of my only child, / future ex-wife. She ran in to buy some cigarettes. We both smoked at the time. So I sat in the car. She ran in to get, here's some money, you go get cigarettes. I sat out in the car with the radio going. Now, back in the day, there were some really cool radio stations in the D.C. area. 1980. So remember WAMU?
Yes.
American University, college radio, no commercials, anything they wanted to play. You catch the right DJ at the right time.
Those were the best.
Cool
that
shit.
Was the glory years of those.
There was also WGTB, Georgetown Broadcasting, Georgetown University, same thing. Now, those two stations, and on a good day you can get them, but on a bad day you couldn't because it was college radio. But those two, after the DJs that grew up in that place, Surf, I've mentioned him on this show, Damien, Weasel, these great DJs, ended up on this one radio station called WHFS out of Washington, D.C. They took the college radio format and put it on FM radio amongst all the commercial stations and played shit like what we're about to hear.
So it was like
they would play
K-Rock
Zappa.
In L.A.
But more so.
You said put it on FM, but the college radio was on FM as well. But you mean like put it in a big commercial FM radio.
It was almost like free form. We're going to play the entire Flo and Eddie album from whatever.
Ooh.
And they'd play it in drive time.
One hen.
Right?
One hen,
two ducks, right? Exactly. So you know, it was this free form, and they stuck to it, and they were great. So hats off to these great DJs. So I'm sitting outside this 7-Eleven waiting for Chicky to come back with our cigarettes, right?
Chicky.
With my cool, mild 100s.
Oh, God.
And I hear this song. And it was so hooky and so quirky and so fucking weird.
It was Trooper.
It wasn't Trooper
good,
at all.
Good clean fun.
Yeah, it was good clean. No, the thing is, it was good clean fun. And but it was, I noticed right away it had this odd time. And I'm going, that's not 4-4. But the hook of the chorus was so memorable. And it had that sort of singing song. This melody during the verses, I'm going, it's such an earworm. Chick comes back with her cigarettes, drive. You know, so we're 3 miles from home, right? We drive home. Now, back in the day.
Did she rob the place? Why did she just go drive?
No, it's just what, that's my life now.
Okay.
It's my life now. But so we only live 3 minutes from the place. We only left the fucking house to get cigarettes, right?
Wow.
She got, you're driving. Okay. Thank God she did, right? So I drive home. Now, remember the way radio used to be? They'd play like 9 songs in a row.
Yeah.
And if you're going into a store, you're not, and you hear that song, you go, who was that? Oh, who the fuck was that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm waiting outside in the car. Oh, come inside. You know, we got somewhere to be. Aren't you getting ready? I go, no, no, no. I got to hear who this fucking song is. So I'm 15 minutes sitting outside going, I got to hear who this is. I need to know who this band is. I need to know the name of the song. Because it was one of the, it was just, it brought me so much joy and happiness. It was so great. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Didn't happen. They never did it. So now all of a sudden the song eludes me. I call the station.
It's your white whale.
Right? So, okay, so now 3 years later, maybe four years later, right? This song that has swam in my head, and I don't remember the lyrics. All I remember is that, but I'm doing it in four, and it wasn't, which is even cooler. So my brain is going, fuck, this uncompleted thing, right? And so now I'd met my new drug dealer, Mike Myers.
Oh.
Okay. And
so the murderous guy from Halloween.
No, Mike Myers. Now, this is so, what's weird is that these worlds are so disconnected. So now I'm pretty much divorced, you know, all this shit. A bunch of years later, four years later, I'm divorced, you know, and now I've got a new drug dealer and he lives in Virginia. So I go over to his house. He's an avid vinyl collector. He's got thousands of records, right? And he keeps talking about this band, NRBQ. So he turns me on to their, what I think is their greatest record, At Yankee Stadium.
That's a fantastic record.
And I love this band, right?
The only one you can see in the bins for less than $10.
And it's an amazing record.
Really
buy
good
it.
Record.
Buy that record, okay? Or the dog gets it.
Great pop record, so, like a jangly, Beatlesque maybe,
or R&B, smooth, all the things I described earlier, right? So I'm putting. He goes, "Oh, these guys are great!" And all of a sudden, I'm thumbing through his albums, and I found this song again. I'm going, "No fucking way!" Now I know this band is called NRBQ, and the song is. Which I'm not going to tell you yet. And so,
of disguise.
So now the almost mission complete. So I'm digging that. Now, years later, 88, 89, I'm working at the Bayou.
Yeah.
Well, while I'm working there, I worked there for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, two and a half years on and off. And I kept coming back even after I stopped working there to help out. We need somebody. NRBQ plays there, what, three times, maybe four times the duration while I'm working there. And they played that song every fucking time and every fucking time. So it was a song that eluded me.
So now you're...
Right.
Okay, so
right.
You're
but
good.
Now the thing is, I it was only these rare moments where the song hit me, but it's so fucking hooky and so earwormy. But now remember, in the middle of the 80s, I didn't buy records. I stopped buying records because records were stupid. And then... And then by the end of the 80s, when I'm working with NRBQ and doing their monitors and shit, and they played it every time. They played that song every time. It was so
for
awesome.
You? Did you ever tell
no,
them?
No, I never did.
Oh, okay.
Never said a word. Just silently went, I hope they play that song at me. And they did every time. But I never had the record. So now I don't know what album's it on. I mean, Michael had it, but I don't remember. Mm. It's been years now. What 30 years passed now.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'm going, you know? And I'm at Zia's.
The record store up the street.
2 weeks ago, and I saw an NRBQ album. Ryan, what's the name of that album? Tiddlywinks.
Tiddlywinks.
Right? Yeah. And I pick it up, because every time I find an NRBQ album, I go, you know what? I hope this song is on it. And it was. And it's called Me and the Boys.
Me and the Boys. Well, that's the one that was on The Simpsons.
Right?
It was on The Simpsons.
Was it?
Yeah. Me and the Boys.
Yes, Me and the Boys.
Yeah, it was featured on an episode.
That's awesome.
Yeah, of
Yay!
Course it was. That's how I know the NRBQ.
Greatest event of all the NRBQ songs. This was that song that was literally a 30-some year earworm.
Some
and now
odyssey
finally, that you went on. I finally own it. I can put it on.
Anytime you want.
And listen, and I know everybody's going, internet jackass. I know.
What's the fun in that?
Right? I know. That's what the show's all about.
Yes, this is a far better story.
It's a boy and his tune. And, you know, that's all it was. But so, okay, so there's that. And I just, I am so happy to be able to play this song. I can't wait for you. Just, it's, well, what a hook. What a hook. And so now we talked about all that. And it's just a little story about me and that little song. Let's talk about the time signature challenge.
Okay.
All right. Let's go ahead and spin it. Okay. It's Me and the Boys. It's a song called Me and the Boys. Terry Adams, keyboard player, wrote it from 1980 release. Tiddlywinks by NRBQ on Rounder Records. But check out the time signature. And it's verse for
all the way through it?
It's different. Every the choruses are set in stone. The choruses I'll give away. They're four bars of four, so it's 16 count, right? Except every other is 12, so they drop a bar. So it's four bars of four, then three bars of four, four bars of four.
Okay,
that's a chorus. I'll just give you that. Every verse is different phrasing.
Wow. Jeez, NRBQ. Okay. Our work is cut out for us, Liz.
But fuck that. Just dig the hook.
Still is out of draft. Me and the boys taking in the sights. Me and the boys. Just me and the boys. Me and the boys. Don't raise questions about how it's done. We're just messing around having fun. The car can't shift. But we love that sound. Me and the boys. Just me and the boys. Me and the boys. It ain't like us to hang around this town for square. Just prove us that I've got to find something. I don't want to think about what they do now. Soon get there. Me and the boys. Just me and the boys. Me and the boys. Just me and the boys. Me and the boys.
Dude, the mystery is solved. That record is home in my hands where it finally belongs. That damned earworm.
featured in the episode of The Simpsons when Marge is kidnapped by bikers.
You're such a geek. They took over the shit, yeah. Dude.
But then we watched a little video while that song played. There's like two other episodes that have like the Krusty the Clown having the daughter. They play. They're at the beach together, and it's an NRBQ song. They were just fans. The writers of The Simpsons were fans.
How can you not be fans of NRBQ? You have to be fans.
So, time signature challenge, AD.
Time signature challenge. Okay. By the way, that was NRBQ from the Tiddlywinks album. Of course, me and the boys.
So I had what did I have? There was a bar of five in there. I had
yes.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, or maybe a 6. What was it? No, it ended up being 13 beats.
Yeah, so, they go rogue. Okay, so I actually went through the whole song because I'm
you're
going
a geek.
At first, knowing that it was an odd time, I thought second verse, same as the first. So I'm going, okay, first verse. And then I listen to the second verse. I go, oh, that's fucking different, those bastards. Mm-hmm. So each verse contains 27 beats.
Okay.
Okay. The first verse breaks down as, like, you can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay.
Then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Okay, yeah.
And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Uh-huh.
Then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Me and the boys, right?
And that's when...
right?
That
and that's when the chorus kicks in.
Disjointed, but it flows, right? And you're listening to the words, so it seems like it's driven by the lyric. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Me and the boys.
Right. Okay, so, right?
That is wild.
Fair enough, right?
But hooky. It doesn't lose the hook. That's... That's
7-Eleven cigarettes. Hey, right?
Hey, math rockers, make your songs feel like that where you don't even notice that it's an odd time.
But
signature.
When I'm sitting in that old car outside that 7-Eleven, it was just really about it was just so so hooky and simple, though. That's what's brilliant. So the next verse, they go into it. Okay. So you got ba 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 da ba ba. So let's call it the short version, which is the ba 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 da ba ba da ba da. That's
six.
The six, right?
Mm-hmm.
So second verse, they go six twice. Ba 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 da ba ba da ba da ba 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 da ba ba da ba da.
Okay.
Then they do the longer one. Ba 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 da ba ba da ba da ba.
The seven. So mm-hmm. They go 6, 6, 7.
So instead of 6, 7, 6, they go 6, 6, 7. And then the ba 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 da ba ba da ba da da da. Me and the same thing. So they end with the 8.
Okay, just to finish off 27 complete
right.
beats.
Verse 1, 6, 7, 6, finish with the 8.
Could you count it in 9?
If you wanted to. Ah, but they do. Verse 3.
Oh!
They go, ba 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 da ba ba da ba da. No, it's 6, 6, and 6, and then 9. So in... They right.
I've got you confused. You're looking at your notes.
So they had
because it's 27 beats. You just counted 9 three times.
Six and six. So they had 6, 7, 6, and 8. 6, 6, 7, and 8. 6, 6, 6, and 9.
Okay.
Cocksuckers. And it's brilliant. And all they did was just change the fucking lyric to fit the rhythm.
Just lyric.
And the bounce never changes. You're still bouncing like
well the backbeats.
Those cartoon peanuts.
Yeah, the backbeat's always there. Wow. That's a great, congratulations for finding that record.
Oh,
you seem very happy about that.
Joyous. What a great way to start the new year.
And everyone loves NRBQ. You can't not like that band.
Come on, if you don't write to me, I'll moiety you.
Well, that's going to do it for us here on episode 198, the first official episode of season 6 of the Shabby Road Record Show. Off we go. Let's thank Liz Damian Brooks for running the controls over there in the Chevy Command Center.
You're welcome. I'm doing my official royal wave.
How do you like the new, improved Chevy Command Center for season 6?
It's the same.
Yeah, we haven't done anything.
Yeah, that was a nice try, Ryan.
We just took a couple weeks off and now we're rejuvenated, AD. That's right. Thank you guys very much for hanging out with us here. You can find us on the social media stuff, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Shabby Podcast. If you are inclined to go back and listen to the archives, you can find all of them at shabbyroadrecordshow.com. At that website, you can also click on an Amazon banner.
Oh!
If you're doing, you got a bunch of gift cards for Christmas, didn't you? Didn't you?
Didn't
so, so, why don't you use them up? But first, click through our little banner at the shabbyroadrecordshow.com page. And that way, you can, you know, help us out a little bit. Doesn't cost you a penny. Doesn't take anything off that grandma's gift card or your weird uncle's gift card that he gave you because he doesn't know what you're into.
You were actually pointing when you said, didn't you? You pointed at some invisible
I did.
Foe.
Like that's some invisible person. You can do all kinds of stuff there. Buy us beer like Dan McBride did. Again, thank you, Dan McBride. Can't wait to see you guys next time. We're in, I think it was Pennsylvania. Yes, sorry. We don't know where we've been, where we're going.
Throw a dart at a map. There we are.
There we are. Yeah. Just put me on the bus and go, we're here. Load in.
Don't
go play.
Don't eat the whole brownie, Ryan. You got a 30-hour drive.
So many stories. All right. Well, is that it? Yes. The mystery boxes are empty. So it's time for me to rock my liver to sleep. After a couple of these Miller High Lifes. But before I go, I'll say goodnight, Moon, to a pantsless A.D. Adams.
Well. If there's anything we've learned from tonight's episode, it's, well, we've learned nothing. I can guarantee you we'll be back next week making the same big mistake yet again.
Yes.
For your edification and entertainment. So until then, thanks for tuning in. We sure did miss you while we were gone, didn't we, gang?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I'm so glad to be back.
So thanks for being here. Happy New Year to all. And to my pal and co-host, Ryan McKay, I wish you, sir, a Happy New Year and a blonde, thin Jew.
Oh, my God.
Can we may have to cut that one out.
We may need to cut that one out. If we didn't cut out what I left in from that last week, segments.
I mean, in the best of ways, though.
Did you hear what you said in that the first super segments?
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.